Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today it's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Good morning.
Good morning.
What weird weather we've had.
Don't we say that every month?
It seems like it. I was just going to say, is that the first line I say every month?
Is there any unweird weather anymore? It's just,
but the other
it's just weather.
It was so warm and 74 in Boston. Like, what?
Yeah,
is happening?
So my wife and I were like, what? You know, we didn't look at the Boston forecast. We were like, wow, it's really warm. It's 55, you know.
Yeah.
And then we're looking at the news, the local news, which we don't usually do. What? It was in the 70s?
I know.
It's just crazy anymore. The plants are so confused.
Yeah, the plants are confused. What about the birds? Does that impact the birds at all when we have those fluctuations in temperatures? Because now it's going to get cold again.
Yeah, well, they don't get back to me when I ask them these things, but it stands to reason that they would be. I mean, it's 70s in January. I mean that has to be confusing. Things are definitely changing, and that contributes to this trend of the winters being warmer on average. And
yeah.
As I've talked about before, that's one of the main climate change signals around here in terms of weather. Is the on average warmer winters? You know, the Habas don't freeze over anymore. sometimes they do, but less often.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be more. That kind of thing used to be more frequent. So on average, yeah, this is the new normal. And these really weird warm spells seems to be a big part of it. And then, well, you know how it is. In a week or two, it's going to be single digits,
right,
or you know,
again.
Something like that.
So these, you know, the robins that we have now are from north. They're not our summer robins.
As you
always say,
they're from away.
So are they saying, whoop, time to head north, it's warm?
No. But people are talking about how they're, you know, they're on the lawns eating worms like it's April or whatever.
I had some this past week in my yard, but there were bunches of them in, I don't know, what do you call it, a group of robins? What do you call them? I don't even know.
It's a flock.
A flock, okay.
Yeah,
flock.
I don't know. I don't
flock
know if
of robins
one of those.
In my hollies.
So I have news for you. All of those cool, weird names for flocks of birds are all made up.
They're still flocks.
Yeah, they're not. None of those are like ornithologically valid. They're just whimsical people came up with them over the years, and then somebody put them together, and it gets sent around. Murder of crows and that sort of thing.
So it's flock.
A parliament of owls. That's another one.
Oh, I like that though. Parliament of owls.
That is,
yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I think the owls are more wise, but
All right, so
it either demeans the owls or it gives the parliaments too much credit. I don't know.
So we had the Christmas bird counts some unusual.
Can't believe they're over already.
In the flash of an eye. Right?
The holiday season just gone.
Blink of an eye, I guess.
Yes.
I got to get my saying straight this morning.
Yeah. So I managed to do four counts this year. I normally do five.
Well, really? You do five? That's a lot.
Well, I've done five. You know, I was a single birder guy for an awful long time and get into these patterns, and I'm starting to get questions like, are you going to continue doing five counts during the holiday season? You know, a lot of family obligations these days. But I managed to do four. You know, I have counts where I lead a sector, and there's one, the Truro count, I'm the compiler. That one's not optional at all. I'm the, you know, leader of the whole count.
You're the important guy.
Yeah. Well.
You need to write all those down.
Yeah, you know, you have to organize your teams and make sure you have enough people in the different sectors and all that, and then put all the data together and then enter it on the National Audubon site. The Christmas bird counts are run by National Audubon. It's the biggest, oldest citizen science project out there, as far as I know. But it was a wacky Christmas bird count season. There were some really interesting birds, and that's one of the fun things about it is people get out there and they're just walking around neighborhoods they wouldn't otherwise go birding in, because under normal birding circumstances, you go to the hot spots. You know, you go to Fort Hill, or you go to Coast Guard Beach, or you go to Race Point. You go to your pond that you go to. But on Christmas bird counts, you go somewhere. I mean, people come from off Cape to cover obscure neighborhoods in Osterville on the mid-Cape, you know, for example. And you get to really know your sector. And you walk around in neighborhoods with feeders, and you play your little screech owl tape at all the different wet thickets with fruit in them, and you learn to read the landscape to know where the birds are. And any kind of running water with dense thickets, especially with fruit in them, to be honest, especially invasive things like multiflora rose, wherever there's multiflora rose thickets, there will be birds in the winter, including potentially interesting ones like yellow-breasted chats and things like that. And so people turned up some really interesting things in out-of-the-way places, like a Western tanager turned up in a neighborhood in Sandwich. There had already been a painted bunting. Maybe we should get the painted bunnies later. It's a crazy, crazy year for painted bunnies.
Yeah,
there have been like nine of them.
The last couple of times you've been on.
There shouldn't be any. They're just not. I mean, they should be wintering in the Caribbean or at most Southwest Florida. But there have been nine reports,
at least,
on the Cape in November, December into January.
And you had the American white pelican.
In Truro, we had an American white pelican. So there have been two species of pelican reported from Wellfleet Harbor in the past month. There was a brown pelican a few weeks ago. It was just a one-day wonder. Nobody refound it. Someone got a photo of it. And so then I get a call during the Christmas bird count, the Truro Christmas bird count on January 2nd from the team covering the harbor. And they're like, we're looking at a pelican, a white pelican. And I'm thinking, I just hear pelican. I'm like, oh, it's back or it's still there. Not thinking it was a different kind. So two different kinds of pelican, both uber rare. There shouldn't be any pelicans on Cape Cod in the last month in Wellfleet Harbor. And luckily for me, this one-day wonder American white pelican, which is a giant, spectacular bird. It's like a bed sheet with black edging just kind of circling overhead. It was a one-day wonder on the day of the count.
Wow.
So goody for me. Yeah. And I've been checking. That's not an easy bird to miss, and I don't think anybody has seen it since. So where is that bird? Usually it would turn up, someone in Rhode Island would see it, or New Hampshire, something like that, but it just vaporized. This massive, massive bird with a foot-long yellow bill, they're not easy to miss. So two different teams saw it over the course of 2 hours.
Yeah.
One in North Truro, and then two hours later, the Wellfleet team saw it. So, like I said, they're hard to miss. So that was fun. And that's why we do it. Well, there's a lot of reasons we do this. It's the sort of data collection of it and the long-term monitoring aspect of it. It's important for monitoring trends. Lots of people use this data. Scientists use this data in published research because it's very long-term. And so trends are apparent in wintering bird populations when you look at this Christmas bird count data, all collected by us volunteers. But sort of what gets us out of bed is the potential to, there could be an American white pelican out there.
You don't know what you're going to find.
You never know what you're going to find.
866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, or stories this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from Cindy. I've heard that crows roost on Martha's Vineyard, and recently I have observed hundreds of them flying south at dusk over my house in West Falmouth. I counted well over 500 birds. If they all end up on the vineyard, where do they roost?
I don't know. Someone should call in and tell us. I never, ever get over to the vineyard. I wish I did. But it's a good question. I know they do it. And, maybe Luann Johnson or someone's out there listening can call in.
Call and let
tell
us know.
Tell us about the Christmas count out there, too.
I think you'd notice 500 crows.
Yeah, 500. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. That's typical, though. And this has been a well-known phenomenon for a long time. I just can't put my finger on where it is that they roost. I just know that they do this daily commute and that some of them will be fish crows, which everywhere else are hard to find in the winter. Fish crows migrate, unlike our American crows, which, maybe they move, but they're here year-round. They're never not American crows on Cape Cod. But the fish crows are here for the breeding season and then leave
Are they a little bit smaller than the American
crows? They're a little bit smaller, but mainly they have a different voice. I don't know if we...
No, I don't think we have any crows this morning.
Yeah, I don't see... quick on the recordings, Dan, over there. But they're like, uh-uh. They don't sound like an American crow. They sound like they're kind of nasal. They're like the Fran Drescher of crows, is how I say. And so they're around, and they're part of that flock, which is unusual because, like I say, everywhere else, the fish crows are pretty much gone for the winter. But the vineyard is weird. I mean, it's warmer on average on the islands, and a little bit further south than other parts of the state. And so they get weird things like that. And also, somebody just posted, I think, to the Facebook group, a big flock of turkey vultures. That's another bird that's not supposed to be here. Like, nobody saw a turkey vulture on the Truro Christmas bird count. Or
did they see it maybe in the Bourne one? Maybe sometimes don't they turn up?
Yeah, there's actually even been a black vulture around the Bourne landfill. The landfill is part of this. You know, that's part of why things like fish crows and turkey vultures are there in the winter, but not other places. But the vineyard had this big flock of turkey vultures. It was like very strange, very out of season for January.
We have an email from Amy. She says, I can hear great horned owls at night very close by. Do they tend to call from areas close to their nesting area? What should I be looking for to spot a great horned owl nest? That's part one of her question.
Yeah. If you're hearing them now, they're on territory. They're probably pretty much always on territory, and they're fairly vocal year round, but they're definitely vocal now. They're paired up. They're usually paired up pretty early, and they nest very, very early. So yes, they're thinking about nesting now. I don't know if any would have eggs. I mean, maybe they do. I don't think anybody's really monitoring great horned owl nests very closely around here, but it would be interesting to look at the date of first egg laying and whether things like a 70-degree day, the increased frequency of weirdness like that, is prompting them to lay eggs sooner.
Yeah,
they have a really long nesting cycle, like most big birds.
Well, I was going to ask you why they nest so early, and that's
right.
Why.
Right, and so it takes a long time for those chicks to fledge. And so they start early, and that's why, the same with an osprey. Ospreys start nesting nowhere near as early. They're nesting in April, but it takes them a long time. It takes them they only get one shot.
Mm-hmm.
They can't re-nest, or that, you know, if their nest fails, they can't have another one because it takes them so long to fledge. They just have one shot, and it's the same with great horned owls. And so, you know, they'll lay eggs now, and the chicks will fledge sometime during the summer, and then you'll hear them making their weird screeching sounds in the woods.
So if she's hearing them, is any clues as to how she could find the nest?
No, I never find nests.
Yeah, aren't they hard to see? I mean, you always hear them, but you don't usually see them.
Yeah, if you spend a lot of time in the woods, so you're not going to find a nest at night when they're calling. There are tricks that people who study owl nests use that I won't divulge, but if you just spend a lot of time in the woods, the way you'd probably have to luck into it with the help of some crows, and they wouldn't necessarily lead you to the nest, but that's how I find great horned owls during the day. It's sort of a happenstance thing where I hear crows going crazy, and there's a certain level of crazy in a crow flock that tells me, yes, that's a great horned owl.
Yeah.
That's not just a red-tailed hawk. You know, they get mad at red-tailed hawks, but they get really mad at great horned owls. They just lose their minds.
Would you maybe see a little, droppings on the ground? Would that be, or they pretty much stay in the nest?
Yeah, you might. You might see pellets. The pellets and droppings will tell you there's a roost or a feeding perch or something like that. One of their day roosts or
so
a place
that
where
you probably have a better shot seeing them day roosting than you would finding the nest.
And I would certainly look for a nest. You know, they'll nest in an old crow nest or something like that, or an old hawk nest, an old Cooper's hawk nest, or maybe a red-tailed hawk nest. They don't really build a nest. They're famous for nesting in, and this is not really relevant to Cape Cod, but they nest in great blue heron nests in the big great blue heron colonies, which are in swamps. There's a famous one along Route 2. There's one at the Suasco Reservoir in Westboro that my brother lives near there, so I would go look at that one now and again. And you'd see this great horned owl sitting on this great blue heron nest incubating eggs in a snowstorm in early February. And the great blue herons are months away from coming in and nesting.
It must be such an odd sight, too, because they're so big. They're big birds, great horned owls.
Yeah, they're big, powerful. Yeah. I mean, they're serious. A great horned owl is the one predator that can kill an adult-sized osprey. I mean, it's usually wow. young ospreys that they take, but they're, you know, like full, just about full-sized ospreys or full-size ospreys. A great horned owl has the advantage at night, and they can just land on the, just mm-hmm. pick them out of the nest.
Amy has a second question. We put up our screech owl box. It's currently oriented with the opening toward the southwest, away from our house. I was hoping to have the opening toward the house, but my husband said the owls won't use it if it is. Any advice on orientation, north, south, east, west, for the box, and if I can face it toward the house?
I wonder why he doesn't think they would use it if it's facing the house. I hadn't heard that. Mm. I haven't had any luck with mine, but it's been 100% because of squirrels, not because of the orientation. I have mine facing the house, mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean much because it doesn't have any owls in it. I've only had it there for like a year, mm-hmm. and it's just been full of squirrels.
So do they
I've
not
had to
care?
Pull dead squirrels out of mine. It's really been, wow. yeah, I don't
I mean,
know what happened there.
Where the sun is shining on the box or something, it doesn't matter. So, the way the winds are coming doesn't really matter?
I would have to go into the literature on that. I don't know how much orientation matters to them.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably not that much.
I think she should try it and see what happens.
Yeah, that kind of thing matters more if you're hanging a bat bar or a bat house or mm-hmm. something like that. They really like it hot.
Hot.
But an owl, I mean, I would think they'd be pretty okay with it if, as long as it's not filling up with wind and rain at mm-hmm. the time that they're selecting a hole.
All right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. It's Bird News this morning. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point, Bird News This Morning with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org.
So I checked in with a resource that I always direct people to when there's questions about any kind of nest boxes or, you know, where to place them, what the dimensions should be, how to monitor them, that kind of thing. And it's Cornell's Nest Watch. And it's something we participate in at Mass Audubon, where whenever we have a series of bird boxes at a sanctuary that we monitor, and we do that at our sanctuary with volunteers. We're looking for new volunteers, incidentally, to monitor our bird boxes, if anybody's interested. We send all of our data to Cornell's Nest Watch. And this is another great citizen science project that is then available to researchers. So I checked in on what they say on Eastern Screech Owl. And so they have this handy information page about what their nesting habitat is, where to put the nest box, when they nest, minimum spacing, nest height, all that kind of stuff. And under facing direction, it says any.
Any. Ah, you
any
were right.
Direction.
See, you got that. Okay, any. All right.
So that, yeah, that was the main bullet point of this thing. I was right.
Richard sent us a note. He says, one night a week or so ago, I heard at least 5 great horned owls and at least 2 screech owls all calling for an hour or so in the early evening. This is in the vicinity of the valley that sides Hamlin Farm Road.
Yeah, very cool. I had the same experience last night. I was the speaker at Cape Cod Bird Club last night, which is held at the Museum of Natural History in Brewster. It's the second Monday of every month. It's usually the day before this show.
Right.
Anyway, people should come to the club meetings. So we're getting ready to leave, and I hear a screech owl, and they're not. Screech owls are very easy to call in the winter, but they're not typically calling on their own unless you get them to call. But this one was just calling on its own, giving that the low, eerie, kind of quiet trill back in the thicket off the parking lot, that kind of
that's
sound.
Good.
I don't know if that's coming
yeah.
across.
Yeah.
And so I was able to, I imitated it and it came in and it sat in a tree above us and was calling some more, and then it took off. And then a great horned owl started calling. Great horned owls are very vocal right now. They're very vocal. They're very common, and you can hear them on a calm night. I would just go outside and listen, mm-hmm. and if you stay out long enough, you'll hear a great horned owl, I would guess, pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would hear them in my neighborhood, and it's, you know, not...
Yeah, that's pretty...
Yeah,
that's,
and there's
pretty
a lot of houses.
Suburban, yeah, right. And so that's what I'm saying, is that they're very successful and abundant on the Cape, and anywhere there's trees. And screech owls are just everywhere. I mean, yeah. If there are trees, there are screech owls. Yeah. They're in dense, tangly thickets of non-native vines and things and, you know, ugly-looking forest and cemeteries and backyards. Yeah, they're, yeah. And they're very, very successful nocturnal predators.
Amy's going to like this email that we just got from Margaret. Margaret says, I have a friend in West Tisbury whose screech owl box faces her house. She's had a screech owl using it for several years now. The box is approximately 150 feet from her house. There you go. Facing it. All right.
I don't think it needs to be that far away, but I don't think they're that picky, but that's great. Yeah. I mean, I'm just jealous with mine.
Yours hasn't been used.
I know. I was talking to somebody who said they had to, like, constantly pull squirrel nesting material out of theirs until finally it was successful and they
does
got
the
an owl
Does the hole
have
to be the same size? Is that why the squirrels can get in there? The hole has to be big enough for the...
A squirrel will always be able to get into an owl box. You can't make the hole
small.
Small that a squirrel can't get
in. Let's talk to Tom, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Good morning, Tom.
Oh, look at that. Tom's part screech owl. It's a screech owl.
Good job, Tom.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. Yeah, I often see the crows at pretty high altitude heading towards Nantucket. And we lived there, or when I used to live there, Mattocksham Valley and Tom Nevers is where they'd all congregate. Mm. And we'd go through there in the scrub oaks in the morning, and you'd see dead crows with just their skulls ripped off.
Oh, and my.
Their brains gone.
Ooh.
And it's a good reason that they hate the great horned owls.
Yeah. Well, that's
back at night and just.
Where would you see the? Because there aren't any great horned owls on Nantucket, or not very. I don't know how many records there are, but they're not really known to be there. I don't know who would be doing that.
I've seen them quite often. I mean, when I lived over there, it was a goshawk in the state forest, and none of the birders knew about that. And
That's a really rare thing.
Pretty
yeah.
surprised.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tom, thanks for that info. Appreciate that. I'm wondering if thanks for the call. Have you heard anything about the long-tailed ducks? You know that you usually see in the winter over Nantucket.
Yeah.
The last few years they haven't been in the great numbers that they used to be. Here.
Right, and that seems to still be the case.
That was something. Let me tell you,
yeah,
if you've never seen that. That was amazing.
My colleague at Mass Audubon, Well Felipe, just led a Nantucket weekend, which has become an annual thing. It's something we used to do, and this employee of ours, Joel Wagner, is a good young birder, and he brought some folks over there, and they had a great weekend of birding. But it wasn't like the days of old with the huge commute.
Do we know why?
No.
We don't? Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, I don't.
Then
maybe
I guess we don't.
If somebody does, if somebody on Nantucket's listening, you know, maybe Edie Ray or somebody's listening and could fill us in. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You know, we always hear about some interesting bird sightings on Nantucket. They get some pretty interesting visitors.
So I just confirmed there are no great horned owls on Nantucket. So I'm a little surprised this guy is saying he saw them frequently because there's literally no records ever in eBird. I just looked it up.
All right. Good to know about that. All right. So you said you were going to offer some deep winter birding tips. Let's hear it.
Oh, yeah. Step one, go outside. this is a great time for ducking, waterfowling. Interesting stuff has been turning up recently, including right around here. Trying to remember which ponds. There's so many good ponds in the Falmouth area.
And, you know, I'll tell you, if you aren't friends on Facebook with Falmouth Birds, there's lots of great pictures of you know, ducks and things. And they just do it. And they tell you where you can see some of these things. So if you're not already part of that group, Falmouth Birds on Facebook.
Yeah. And then there's a Cape Cod Birders Facebook group. There's a Nantucket one. For crying out loud, the Vineyard has two. I still haven't figured out why. But there's two birding Facebook groups for the Vineyard.
I
always get
out.
Confused and have to check one or the other. Let's see. So there's a bird. It's a tufted duck scop hybrid that is around here in Falmouth. I think first found by Peter Crossan. So you get these big flocks of scop in Falmouth, and scop are these diving ducks that come from elsewhere. They come from the prairie pothole region, you know, interior wetlands of Canada and the northern states. And they'll winter on places like Salt Pond and Sitter's Pond and places like that. You get flocks of scop. And it's always worth checking these flocks for a tufted duck, which is in the same genus. It's a European, a Eurasian species that looks like a scop but with a black back and a kind of a graceful curve to the top of the where the side, the bright white side meets the black back. But most importantly, it's the male has this big tuft of feathers coming off the back of the head. And then a female, you know, looks sort of like a female scop, but has a little tuft. Mm-hmm. And so every year there's usually one somewhere. Nantucket has pretty consistently had one the last several years during the winter.
Look who's calling.
Yay.
Edie Ray on Nantucket with a duck report. Hi, Edie.
Hi, Edie.
Hi, guys.
Good to hear from you.
So I think, as with many things, the answer is not quite known. But it seems to be possibly all about the food. It was thought in the past that the ducks would sleep on Nantucket Sound, overfly the west end of the island, and then go out over the shoals to dive down deep and feed all day,
right,
and then make the commute home to sleep in the sound overnight. So probably, maybe, sort of, the food has changed, and it's just not available in the spots where it was.
Yeah.
And so the commute has stopped for now.
Yeah, that's such a shame. Boy, that was really, what a sight, huh? It's like, you're looking at smoke in the sky. Yeah.
Spectacular sight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I figured. Food is usually a good place to go when you're making guesses. I don't know why the food would have changed. I mean, certainly warming ocean temperatures has been wreaking havoc with various types of seabird food chains, from nesting alcids on the West Coast in particular, and also in Europe, and nesting terns in the Gulf of Maine, puffins. The changing water temperatures changes the fish assemblage and sometimes puts the wrong fish in the wrong places. With long-tailed ducks are eating kind of big zooplankton, weird things, you know, like big amphipods and shrimpy things in the water column, as far as I know. Their diet's not super, super well known, but they're not eating fish. They're eating that zooplankton. And so they would be vulnerable to any changes in that. And I don't know if anybody's looking at that over the, you know, if anybody's collecting data on that over the shoals, the way they are in the bay, they're collecting data on that kind of stuff because of the right whales.
Yeah. Edie, so are you seeing any other, even just a few around, or are they all gone?
Reports from Trish in Matticat, she does see them on occasion, but it's not, you can't set your clock by it like you used to be able to.
Yeah, that's too bad.
The other thing that's interesting is that we used to have what we call the gull show out on the other end of the island on the eastern shore. And we'd have just tremendous assemblages of all sorts of incredible gulls. And that is not happening. We haven't had it for the last few years as we did in past. I think we only had a small handful of Bonaparte gulls, for instance, on our Christmas count recently. So that's something is going on, and it would be great to sort out exactly what it is.
I'm going
to
offer a couple.
I don't know is the answer.
I'm going to offer. That's right, and I'm going to offer a couple of other theories. So, also climate change related. So, Mass Audubon studied the long-tailed ducks back when Cape Wind was still a thing. And so they were actually, I think Dick Veet might have been involved too, but they were putting satellite transmitters on the long-tailed ducks. And so not only were they looking at their local movements between Nantucket Sound and the Nantucket Shoals, but also they knew what breeding populations they went to at the, you know, in the spring. And they were all coming from a pretty small area in northern Quebec, Eastern Nunavut, you know, Eastern Nunavut.
Yep. Right, of course.
Used to summer there. And so if anything is going on, and we've seen this with snowy owls, you have these different kind of subsections of the Arctic, and if something is going on with their food source there or the weather there, a few bad breeding seasons could really impact the population of long-tailed ducks that we're seeing. So something on the breeding grounds, something with the food source because of warming water temperatures, or my last theory is wintering somewhere further north of here, which is something that happens with different birds as things warm. They're not getting this far south because they don't need to, maybe.
Right.
So I'd be interested in any evidence in support of any of
those
theories.
It could be a combination of all of those
anybody.
Things.
Could be a combination. Nature's complicated.
It is complicated. Edie, thanks for calling in with that info. Appreciate that. Yes. Happy
You're
birding.
You're very welcome. I would just say that if anybody happens to see a quarter of a million long-tailed ducks,
yeah,
maybe put up
know.
Put up some flyers.
Thanks, Edie.
<Okey-doke. laughs> Bye-bye. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Edie.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Mike sent us an email, and he says, what advice do you have for young people trying to build a career in conservation stewardship on the Cape, particularly those interested in birds?
Advice for
young people
young
trying,
people
to, build
trying
a career.
To build a career mm-hmm. in birds. So for one thing, apply for our darn scholarship at Cape Cod Bird Club. Nobody seems to want
Nobody's
to apply.
Nobody's applied?
Well, we've got two. Barnstable High School seems to be the only school that our message gets through to, and
wow.
they actually announce it.
Yeah.
And so I think all four of our applicants the last 2 years have heard about it over the morning announcements at Barnstable High School, so God bless them. I don't know. I mean, we pepper every school on the Cape with flyers and email them. I might email them again. And there are some certain bird-oriented teachers that mm-hmm. we, you know, hope can find a likely candidate. But we're literally offering a chance to spend a week in Costa Rica for the cost of round-trip airfare to Miami.
Wow. Some
an incredible thing to put on your college application. But more importantly, for someone who's a kid who's interested in nature and conservation with a focus in birds, with some interest in birds, I mean, it's just a great opportunity.
What age are we talking about here?
For the Costa Rica week, which is late July into early August, that is 15 to 19.
Right.
So this could be somebody at Four Seas. Right. It's not even a local high school. This could be a 19-year-old who's at Four Seas. And then the other scholarship is the one we've run consistently for several years, which is Hog Island Birding Camp in Maine. And that's an incredible opportunity as well. And that one is the end of June.
Right. Mike doesn't say how young. So let's say it's somebody who can't do these scholarship things. What advice you? I would say, I don't know where Mike is, but maybe Mike, if you're anywhere near Wellfleet, volunteer at the sanctuary. And we've got other sanctuaries. They're always looking for volunteers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Volunteer at the sanctuary. We have this LIT program in the summer where it's sort of, you know, young teenage kids who've aged out of camp can be like a pseudo camp counselor, you know, assistant type thing. Volunteering. I had two different high school interns last year that worked with me, one from Nauset and one from Monomoy.
Mm-hmm.
Nauset doesn't really have an internship program. This student kind of took it upon themselves to create one.
Wow, that's great.
But Monomoy High School has an excellent, well-run internship program. I can't really do that this year with the baby coming any second. But
baby number two, we should say.
Yes. Exactly
now
right.
Now you have a toddler and a baby.
We're going to have a two-year-old and a baby, yeah.
Yeah.
Not taking on too much new stuff right for the next couple of months, but...
Yeah, but you should check in. Maybe any of the Mass Audubon sanctuaries, would be interested in helping young people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're always looking for ways to activate young folks interested in conservation, young birders. So get in touch.
Carol's giving us a call from East Orleans. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Mindy. I was sitting upstairs in an upstairs room listening to the program, and suddenly there was this knocking on the outside of the wall. Knock, 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 knock. And I, lo and behold, it's a woodpecker.
Yeah, don't let him in.
No, I won't. But what? Isn't that wild? He's knocking on, is he trying to build dig a hole in the outside of the house?
Well, you sound like you're new to woodpeckers. This is great.
This happens a lot.
Yeah, it's not going to be so. It's not going to be so fun soon. They do a lot of damage to. They've put a lot of holes in my house, the ingrates. And I always say, don't you know who I am? Get off my house.
Do I not
provide enough for you? I left the trees standing. I have suet right over there, and so the little holes, they're looking for food. It doesn't necessarily mean you have an infestation. It just means it's what woodpeckers do. They sort of have a one-size-fits-all solution to everything. You know, they're like, they have a hammer, so every problem is a nail. Mm. They have a bill, so every problem is solved by making a hole in something. sometimes it's advertising, like if a flicker gets up on your metal chimney cap or something like that and makes a racket, that's advertising. But when they're just pecking on the side of your cedar shingles and things like that, they're they're probing around for food. I'm sure there's stuff under those shingles, different insects, you know, larvae and nests and things like that, spider eggs and things like that up under there that they probably get sometimes. But it's a bit of a nuisance, and it's one of the most common what do I do about this problem calls and emails that every nature center in the world gets. Mm. And so if you go to like the Mass Audubon website and, you know, woodpeckers on house, and there's a whole page about it, and people recommend everything from mylar strips to hawk calls and things like this. But I'm not sure any of that really works very well, and some of it's kind of annoying to your neighbors. But if it gets to be a problem, and you're not really asking for a solution, you're just making a whimsical observation. So I'm sort of over answering your question. Yeah. But for those other people out there,
because in this area last year we had squirrels, and it cost a great deal of money to have them live someplace else. So when I heard this, I thought, is it squirrels back? No, it's not the squirrel. It's definitely.
Yeah. They're working together.
What I think is a woodpecker.
Yeah, I think they're collaborating.
Oh, boy.
They're probably not. They actually don't get along. Yeah.
You know, while this was going on, there was a flurry of birds outside the window, different kinds of birds just whizzing back and forth. I mean, very unusual from right now.
Yes, so you got so these mixed flocks of birds in the winter. It's kind of how birds roll in the winter. And so that's why you'll get all this activity at your feeder for like half an hour, and then you don't see them again the rest of the day, or maybe you'll see them again in 2 hours. Mm. They'll have like a circuit they do where the woodpeckers, the nuthatches, the chickadees, and the titmice kind of all move together oftentimes, not always. You know, they'll kind of break apart and come back together. But those mixed flocks, when they come through, that's a good time to get outside and kind of sort through them, because you might notice that there's a couple of bluebirds or a few pine warblers or a yellow-rumped warbler or something a little more unusual in terms of your average backyard birds that's moving with these mixed flocks. But yeah, I find the same thing, that you'll hear the woodpecker tapping when one of these flocks is coming through.
Well, hopefully he's moving on. Carol, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More bird news after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Anton says, a suspected Hammond's flycatcher was spotted on the vineyard in West Tisbury last week. Photos are on the Martha's Vineyard Bird Alert Facebook site. Would love an ID confirmation from any experts.
Well, I saw that, and I already weighed in on that very Facebook post. And as I think people said, at this point, we need to get like a recording of the call or just some more kind of multimedia.
But it looks like it.
But the photos, yeah. And as other people said who weighed in before me, including Jeremiah Trimble, it looks like a Hammond. And so a little background on this. These are like among the hardest bird identifications is this group of little flycatchers known as the Empidinax flycatchers. That's the genus they're in. And they're little gray flycatchers that have, you know, an eye ring and wing bars. And there's several species. The primary one here in the east is the least flycatcher that kind of breeds to our north and northeastern forests. And then out west, there's all these species. And they occasionally turn up in the east in the fall and sometimes into the winter as really rare vagrants that birders get excited about. And oftentimes you have to get a recording of their call. You know, they have the little chip call that might tell you that it's a Hammond's flycatcher and not a dusky flycatcher, which are both Western species. But looking at the pictures that Anton had, this looked like a classic Hammond's, which I saw a lot of when I was working in the desert southwest, and where they move along rivers and migration. And so they have this like grayish head and kind of greenish back and a big eye ring that's like teardrop shape in the back and kind of stubby looking, long winged looking. But this is like graduate level bird identification, and we need more information. But it definitely looked like a Hammond's.
So could be. We can say could be.
Which is a very, very rare bird, a really cool record. If if we can get confirmation.
Yeah. All right. Suzanne is giving us a call from East Orleans. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning. I it seems like now my Orioles don't go back to Baltimore or wherever they're supposed to go in the winter. This is like the third or fourth winter that I've got overwintering Orioles, and they just sort of hang around. Is this a widespread phenomenon now on the Cape?
Yeah. And I have to go back and look at the history of it, but and there's a good example of how Christmas bird count data can be useful, because mm-hmm. eBird has only been around for 10 years, and so there's older things like that are not going to be in there as much. But if you go back through the Christmas bird count data, which anybody can do on the Christmas bird count website, I can look and see if the number of orioles per observer hour has changed on Cape Cod Christmas bird counts over the years. But I remember, talking about East Orleans, that's an area I usually help cover on the Cape Cod Christmas bird count, which runs from like Harwich to East Ham. And I was covering East Orleans, and we had 11 Baltimore Orioles in a neighborhood of East Orleans in mid-December.
Wow.
And they're not supposed to be here. The Orioles come back, you know, May 1st, mm-hmm. and they leave in September, right? And they go to Central America. So why are there 11 Baltimore Orioles? And so part of it is the landscape we have, where there's a lot of things with fruit, like cedar trees. This was a good year for fruiting cedars. They seem to be covered in fruit. The winter berries are covered in fruit. Even the non-native stuff that gets birds through the winter, like bittersweet and multiflora rose, are all covered in fruit. So these kinds of things can get them by, and they will turn up at feeders. And so they seem to be able to deal with the temperatures as long as they can get enough food. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What I don't know is why they're deciding to do this. Like, why 99% of the Orioles go to Central America and some stay in Orleans, you mm-hmm. know, or stop here and don't go any further. Is it there's so much food that they're like, oh, I'm on the wintering grounds and this is fine, and they never leave? And it's true with catbirds, too. A lot of catbirds winter on the Cape. I don't think a lot of people don't realize that, because mm-hmm. they're quiet. And yeah. they retire into these dense thickets, and it can be hard to get them to show themselves. But like Long Pasture Sanctuary, the Mass Audubon Sanctuary in Cummaquid there, it was some ridiculous number of catbirds on the Christmas count there. Like, I don't know, 20 or something ridiculous. They're more common than mockingbirds are in the winter. Mockingbirds have declined. But yeah. Anyway, yes, it seems that Orioles more and more, whether it's we're more aware of it because more people have digital cameras and are using eBird and that kind of thing. But it does seem like more Orioles are trying to make a go of it wintering. Mm-hmm. It's popping up on the different Facebook groups yeah. we were just talking about. People are like, what is this bird? You know, that's just a picture of like a young or female looking Oriole.
Yeah.
What is this bird? Is
I've
this a warbler?
Yeah,
and it's a Baltimore
too.
Oriole. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Suzanne, thanks for the phone call. Henry writes, I read recently on a bird watching Martha's Vineyard Facebook page that there was an eagle sighting in Edgartown yesterday. Have you heard anything about that?
An eagle sighting
in
Edgartown.
We'd have to see a picture of that.
I thought it was specifically a golden eagle that somebody reported. Bald eagle sighting is less and less uncommon, mm-hmm. or I guess you could say more and more common. Mm-hmm. Would make more sense. Because bald eagles are doing very well, and they're getting over to the islands more and more, which they didn't used to do as much because of the water crossing. It was like an unconfirmed golden eagle report that just came across secondhand.
So if somebody sees it, grab a photo.
On the Facebook group. A golden eagle is exceedingly rare on the Cape and mm-hmm. Islands, and really anywhere in Eastern Mass. Mm-hmm. There's typically one somewhere around the Quabbin Reservoir, where there's mm-hmm. a big population of breeding and wintering bald eagles. And then often there's a golden eagle there in the winter. The eastern half of North America has a very small breeding population of golden eagles up in like eastern Canada. And they come through here in migration in very small numbers. But really, like the Cape gets a golden eagle once every 25 years maybe or right. something like that.
Ramesh says, how do I apply for your bird scholarship to Costa Rica?
At the Cape Cod Bird Club website.
Okay.
You can Google Cape Cod Bird Club scholarship, or just go to the Cape Cod Bird Club website. Yes, we should put a link.
We will put a link. So Jenny will put a link to the Cape Cod Bird Club up on our website, capeandislands.org.
And I'm in charge of it, so don't worry about the deadline. I want to extend that deadline anyway.
Okay.
I want to give people a chance because I'm concerned that people didn't hear about it that would like to hear about it yet.
All right, so as we mentioned in the beginning of the show, we've had some warm days. We're about to get some colder temperatures. But this is the thing to think about. A couple of months, we're going to see the first spring arrivals. It's not that far off.
I know. It's so weird. Right. We're 2 months away from first displaying woodcocks, a couple of grackles, a couple of turkey vultures here and there, like those kind of grim early harbingers of spring that, you know, like, yay, grackles.
Yeah. No, I don't say, but yay, woodcocks. The woodcocks are fun.
Oh, they're a lot of fun. And yeah, and it's not unusual for the first ones to be coming back in February.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'll be talking about ospreys before you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Is it end of March when they.
Was it last year that. There have been February records of returning
You're
ospreys
kidding.
On the vineyard. I'm usually skeptical of those, but those were, reliable reports. But typically, St. Patrick's Day is your first ospreys, first piping plovers, roughly around there. Mm-hmm. It's right. stay
Katrina
tuned.
Is giving us a call from Edgartown. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, Mindy. I had a comment about the crows,
sure.
The question from earlier.
Yay.
I don't know where they sleep, but on the vineyard, the fish crows seem to be in Oak Bluffs in the morning, so I imagine they sleep there overnight. And the other crows, I see them migrating from the south to the west every night around sunset in the wintertime, and I imagine that they're going to the mainland. So I don't know, but that's what I see, like flocks of 500 crows passing over, heading towards Woods Hole. But my question was about mourning doves. I associate mourning doves with like a summertime evening, you hear them calling. But then lately in the past week, I've seen a flock of 9 to 12 of them in a tree all together. And I remember from years past hearing them, all of a sudden noticing hearing them in February. So I was just wondering, do they start mating or like forming bonds at this time of year? Or why am I suddenly hearing them and seeing them in the winter after not really noticing them since summer?
Oh, you're hearing them.
I hear them in February. I just,
interesting. I don't
love their call.
Yeah, I don't have a good recall of when exactly I start hearing them. I sort of ignore them, and I shouldn't. They're cool.
No, they're beautiful. Yeah. Love their call.
They're not very bright, but
they make up for it with their song.
Yeah, they have a cool song, a fool's owl. a lot of people think it's an owl when they hear it. But they breed, so they, because they're resident, they have a very long breeding season. So it stands to reason that they are thinking about pairing in mid to late winter, and maybe territorial at that point. They're in flocks this time of year, and you often see them. They'll roost together. Sometimes there'll be 20 or 30 in a tree, usually less. And you'll see 6 or 7 under your feeder or something like that. But they breed very early, and they'll breed pretty late into the summer as well. It makes sense that they would start. I'll have to pay attention. I'll have to start paying attention to my mourning doves.
Katrina, thanks for the call.
Not smart, but very pretty.
Yeah.
Very pretty, that's right, and they have a pretty sound. Just about a minute left. There's some new bird species. There was some article that somebody had sent us about some new bird species in Indonesia.
Yes, right. I briefly scanned this yesterday. It was starting to go around. The New York Times had an article about it, which I wasn't able to open because I'm not a subscriber. And then I think The Guardian, somebody sent us a link from The Guardian. But just one of those, like, yay kind of stories that was not about a 30% decline in birds over the last 50 years kind of thing. This was, it really makes me feel good that there are still these parts of the world that are so unexplored that people can go in there and find 10 new species of birds that we didn't know existed. And this area was ripe for that because they were islands that were separated from the mainland by really deep ocean. So they had really not been connected to the mainland in a long, long time. So plenty of time to evolve. So a great story. Always nice to hear about new species being found in exotic places.
And thanks for sharing that with us. Mark Verity is Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, here the second Tuesday of every month. Thanks, Mark.
All right. See you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.